The information provided on Dr. Tom Rozelle Live by Dr. Tom Rozelle, D.C., interview guests, show co-hosts, or substitute hosts is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. It is for general information purposes only. Information from this broadcast should not replace the appropriate consultation and examination process by a licensed physician. Always consult your own physician prior to changing any current medical directive or prescription.
Welcome to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. This is Dr. Tom Rozelle, and we're here during the Christmas season bringing you, you know, an update, things that we think are important to you, and particularly all of you walking around and shopping and the malls and, you know, the first time maybe you've been out in quite some time. It's the last program for the Rozelle Center for this year, for 2022. And we wanted to make it one that's appropriate, one that's you're probably experiencing right now, if you're out and about and carrying packages. And what are we talking about? We're talking about back pain, my aching back. Kind of a funny time of the year to, you know, do that program. But nevertheless, it's an important one simply because of the fact that, you know, you're really moving around. You're doing things. You're bending over. You're lifting. You're putting up the trees and hanging ornaments and going to parties and doing different things. And all of a sudden, you realize that when you wake up in the morning, that that back of yours doesn't feel so hot. And you say, where did that come from? Well, it's been there, except you've been triggering it for a lot of things. And this is truly, you know, you've heard us talk about the structural, chemical, emotional platform of health. This really fits the picture completely. And I have the ongoing pleasure, somebody who I admire and love and respect relative to his knowledge base, none other than Dr. Harlan Browning, who we love to call the professor. Dr. Harlan, welcome.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Listen, this is, you know, this, I had to think about it because when I saw it on our agenda, it was going to be low back pain. Why? Why this time of the year? Why this week? But it was actually perfectly fit. It's a perfect time. And because people are in that stress mode, people are in that place where, you know, they're doing things that they normally wouldn't do. You know, am I off base on this? Is this is, you know, a real deal that people can, you know, can see some exacerbations of things that just kind of been hiding there for a while?
Yeah, I think, you know, you're touching on a topic that we don't often, you know, talk about, which can be the stress response and how it manifests in our musculoskeletal system, like back pain. So a lot of times just people don't have a stable back to begin with. Maybe they got a little arthritis, they're deconditioned. Now we've got the holidays rolling around and we've got to get all these things done. Our stress levels go up, our cortisol, our adrenaline, our muscle tone gets tighter. And then we go to bend over to pick up our shoe. And guess what? Our back goes out on the 23rd of December, right around the corner from, you know, the big day.
Yeah. Then we're all wondering, you know, how do I handle this? And oh my God, I'm done for the rest of the year. But you know, you touched upon the stress pattern and I want to walk through that a little bit. And you know, we've talked about low back pain and misalignment of the spine and imbalances from the feet up and all of those things over a period of the years that I've known you, and nobody knows it better than you do. And by the way, I want to let our listeners know that they can call us right now at 888-630-9625. 888-630-9625. And if you got a problem, you want to know a little bit more about it, here's an opportunity. We're here to serve you. That's why we do what we do. But let's walk through, and how does that emotional trigger cause a underlying predisposition kind of to express itself?
Well, when we're under a stress response to whatever, it could be, you know, your typical, just don't have enough time to, it could be a dietary thing. We're not eating foods that are correct for us, and maybe we're just not getting enough sleep. Well, our physiology has to adapt to that. So we produce hormones, cortisol being one of them and adrenaline being the other. These are the two biggies that are produced from the adrenal glands. And what those cause is our nervous system to become a little overactive, a little overreactive, we should say. And now we are more susceptible to, you know, slight tweaks of the back or, you know, different injury patterns.
You know, when you look up stress patterns, and we have this tagline, stress kills, and it does, because it activates so many bad things in our body, and we go into fight flight reaction, which is something that we need to save ourselves. But when we're stuck there on an ongoing basis, other problems begin to show their ugliness, if you will. And you have a patient that walks in and says, I can't bend over, or my arms are locking down, or my muscles just feel so tight, or I feel the pain in the leg. But this is, you know, these are triggering mechanisms, as you said, from, you know, cortisol, you know, production and so forth. But let's talk about, if we can, we have people out there today, and I'm going to get into different aspects of low back pain as we go through the program, but this seems to be appropriately fit, you know, present for us right now. What really, let's walk through the mechanism of that emotional stress, running from pillar to post, and then add the holiday cheer to it. And, you know, let our listeners know what really takes place and how the body begins to not deal with it appropriately and ends up with a symptom called pain.
Well, you know, in the background, we have these two competing systems that are always taking place. It's called the sympathetic and parasympathetic. And I know you talk a lot about that because of, you know, the relationship of that vagus nerve. Well, that teeter totter back and forth, that fight or flight or that rest and digest, we should go from high on one end to the low on the other end and then back and forth. But as we become under more stress, then we have a tendency to favor the sympathetic side. That's the fight or flight side, in lieu of giving the rest and protect side its time to shine. So as you know, weeks or months go by, we produce these hormones that what we call are catabolic. They physically break us down. They weaken connective tissue. They damage short-term memory centers in our brain. They disrupt our immune system. They compromise our sleep-wake cycle. So all this is going on in the background, and a person very often just maybe doesn't have great conditioning to begin with. So they don't have a strong core, or they don't move, they don't stretch. So this perfect storm can come out of nowhere, where one day the perfect person's perfectly fine, and the next day their back just goes on them.
You know, when we look at ligaments and tendons, they have a different relationship than some of the other pieces of the body, more directly to the production or inadequacy or too much of a production of steroids within the body. And they give it its tensile effect, if you will, the strengthening of it. And I think this is what you're talking about, is that when those stress levels are constantly being triggered, either through running around and lifting things and putting stuff, so we're doing that muscular pattern, that neuromuscular, and we already have, as you said early in the program, we have some arthritis, we have some underlying problems that have been there, but been tolerable, so we really haven't paid attention to it. And now suddenly, because of more activity, more abnormal movement and bending, and then we go out and we're putting things in our body that are so inflammatory that we increase the cascade, and now we have swelling as well in the joint space, and we have stiffness and muscles that are not reacting. How do those mechanisms become the perfect storm, and you know that causing the pain pattern?
You know, I think it's a combination of, and I can speak from personal experience, that you know sometimes we just don't have the time to do the exercise or prepare the good diet, but we get caught up into these patterns where it becomes multiple days in a row, or weeks in a row, and months in a row, and the body can only sustain so much biochemical assault and mechanical assault. And when I say mechanical assault, in today's world, I find more people are getting hurt because they don't move, as opposed to 25 years ago, when I would see people come in because they hurt themselves while they were moving, because they were doing physical things. So I think a lack of conditioning is a big component for what I see nowadays.
You know, this year, 2022, I've noticed in the office with patients that I've examined, particularly the last 4 or 5 months, that there's more pain patterns that are showing up, particularly back pain and leg pains, that were not typical of the presentations that we've seen over the past. And, you know, you're going to ask me, my opinion, obviously, is that we've been subject to a lot of other things. We've had vaccines put in our bodies. We've had boosters put in our bodies and so forth. And they do cause a clotting mechanism, which is well known. I mean, it's all over, you know, all the medical literature and so forth that we're seeing these things. Can a clotting mechanism, regardless of what its origin from, can trigger the lack of supporting flow, blood flow, if you will, to neuromuscular structures? Or is that inconsequential? Is it something else?
Well, no, you know, certainly, you know, clotting is the byproduct of production of different chemical mediators. We call them cytokines. These are messengers in our body that tell us to either make the blood thicker or thinner. Well, there's also a huge inflammatory response that takes place with those. So the body just produces all these inflammatory mediators. So it's like throwing gasoline on the fire. So yeah, it can affect the vascular system. It can affect the nervous system, the musculoskeletal system. That's why, you know, Western medicine's first line of defense for almost all problems is give some sort of anti-inflammatory, be it an over-the-counter, right, or a prescription or what have you. And we see it for musculoskeletal problems, right? We take an Advil. If a person has a respiratory infection, we'll give them steroids. So, you know, that's why anti-inflammatories are so prevalent in medicine, because it reduces that inflammation in the background.
So let me ask you a question. So when does an anti-inflammatory become the wrong choice?
I think it becomes the wrong choice when we keep going to the same well and using it and not trying to figure out what's initiating this inflammation. You know, I think medicine sometimes can be lazy, and we can blame things on, you know, maybe it's a bacteria, maybe it's a virus, maybe you're just getting old, you know, maybe there's a genetic component, but that doesn't really explain the causation. So sometimes we have to dig a little bit deeper, unless we want to, repeat what we're doing over and over again.
You know, it's interesting when you examine a patient and you're really trying to figure out why that low back pain is there, why it's radiating all of a sudden, why did it show up? And those are the questions that I have every time that I look at a patient. I try to find out what the real trigger was. When was the very first time? When did it start? When did it get worse? What mediating circumstances were around them? And we've had a world of all kinds of things that were not normal. And I'm seeing different types of presentations, as I know that you are. So, you know, when you look at somebody like that and you look at the vascular disruption, people are being put on more statins and blood thinners now because of, you know, whatever. You can draw your conclusions accordingly. But statins themselves, like aspirin, have a direct impact, if you will, on joint space integrity and cartilage formation. Is that right? Am I wrong?
Yeah, and I would certainly throw in for the statin side, we certainly know that it causes myalgia, that be muscle pain in a lot of people. I think it's probably grossly underreported. That's just my opinion. But I mean, it's an accepted side effect because, you know, it's usually one of the first things that they disclose when they run a commercial, that, you know, stop taking it or consult your doctor if you experience muscles, aches, pains, fevers, and that kind of stuff.
Well, we're coming up to a break, and I really want to get into this more in depth relative to not only what the triggers are, but what people can do. My guest, Dr. Harlan Browning, he'll be your host this Wednesday evening at the Result Center for Healing in Fairfax at 6 p.m. So when you're out about shopping, come see us first, and we'll teach you how to modify that pain. Don't go away. Dr. Tom Result Live. Great program. This is one that you might expect for the holiday season, but one that we thought would be appropriate for you. My guest, your host, coming up Wednesday evening at 6 p.m. at the Result Center for Healing in Fairfax, Dr. Harlan Browning. What are we talking about? We're talking about low back pain and why 'tis the season with everything that's going on that your back pain may be flaring up and you're trying to figure out why it happened. Well, this is a true structural, chemical, emotional display. Dr. Browning, welcome back, my friend. Let's get into this a little deeper. You know, we're talking about, or starting to tiptoe into, the effect of certain medications on back problems. And I made the statement that there's so many more people today that are on statins and things of that nature. They have a competing effect within joint spaces, and they can cause back pain to become much worse or persistent, if you will, over time. You want to walk us through that?
Yeah, you know, certainly you're definitely talking about a lot of the anti-inflammatories, and what they do basically is they compete with sulfur ions in the body, and Sulfur, for the folks here who don't know, is a really important ingredient in cartilage. And that's why when you take, you know, vitamins that are specific for your joints and you read the label, it would say, glucosamine sulfate or chondroitin sulfate. So what those products do is they donate sulfur or sulfide ions to the body, which is kind of, that's the glue to help bring everything together. So these medications actually compete with those sulfur ions and ultimately deplete them. So although it helps with our aches and pains on the short term, over the long term, it really makes our joints deteriorate more. And when I say joints, I mean not just the one that bothers you. You know, it's, if you're having a knee problem, well, that's one thing, but it takes sulfur out of the other joints. So you got to keep an eye on that for sure.
So when somebody's taking Advil, you know, I have patients who said, well, you know, I don't take a lot. What do you take? He says, well, maybe 4 to 6 a day, you know, to keep it down, but it's only anti-inflammatory. It's no big deal. And then I try to show them that could be a huge deal and causing things to be far worse because of the increased potential of further degeneration within that joint. And that's truly what happens is whether it's a spinal joint or a knee or an elbow or a neck or whatever, it dramatically potentiates that condition. So how do you deal with that? I mean, is there a fix or are they stuck with it and it's just amelioration where we just have to put a plug in the dike and hope and pray?
You know, first things first, you know, I think the most important thing for people who have pain is, man, the sooner you address it, the easier it is going to be to fix it. And as you know, just as well as I do, some of the harder patients to work with are the 73-year-old guy who's had that bad knee forever and never went to the doctor to have it examined. And then he ultimately has severe arthritis. Now, that's a little bit trickier, where if he went in and sought care when he was in his late 50s and the joint was still viable, then it becomes very straightforward what to do. So if a joint doesn't move, you want to make sure that the mobility is restored. If the connective tissue is either too shortened or in some cases kind of tenting out, you want to correct that. And certainly any of the musculature that surrounds it needs to be conditioned. So it's a team approach. And often the next step would be, like we're talking about, weaning them off of the over-the-counter anti-inflammatories, making sure the diet is conducive to healthy connective tissue growth. Some people just don't get enough protein in their diet. You know, that's just a simple example of just changing, you know, what they're eating.
You know, and the interesting thing is there's so many vegetarians, if you will, that think good vegetarian eating is anything that is not meat. And they're coming in with all these starches and these chips and dips and things of that nature. And they wonder why their inflammatory levels are so high. They don't have the protein to repair. They don't have the amino acids in there to as the building blocks that they need to fix these things. And we see that, unfortunately, every day. And, you know, they walk in and they expect you to fix them. But this is an opportunity for people this Wednesday evening at 6 p.m. Dr. Harlan Browning, the professor, is going to be there and give you the information. I'm going to sit in on that and we're going to see what we can do to help you. This is an opportunity. If you're hurting right now, if you have pain right now, don't put up with it. Let's get it done. You can either call us at, 703-698-7117 or simply go online at rozellecare.com and make that happen and be our guest. Join us and we'll answer all your questions. We'll tell you what you can do to make it happen. Listen, you're going to be out and about shopping anyway. So why don't you take that short period of time and come in, and it might be the first step you need to making 2023 a great year. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozell Live. Don't go away. We'll be right back after some important messages. It is Christmas week and we're all out scurrying and doing and going to parties and, you know, all the craziness we do. In the first year now in a while that we actually have a little bit of, yeah, you know, I think I'm going to go out and, you know, do what I need to do. But in the meantime, you're pulling trees, you're putting up ornaments, you're going to parties, you're doing all the things that you normally wouldn't do year in and year out. And you're finding that you're hurting, that your low back is bothering you and that things aren't quite what they should be. And it gets you a little nervous, right? It gets you a little worried that 2023 may not be a good time as the way things are starting to unfold. But here's the deal. This Wednesday evening, the 21st. It'll be the last presentation at the Rozelle Center for Healing for this year. And we did it specifically this way because we want you to have the opportunity to understand why you may be hurting more going into the new year. And we did it on purpose. We're here. So this Wednesday evening at 6 p.m. at the Rozelle Center for Healing in Fairfax, join us. My guest today, your host this Wednesday evening, Dr. Harlan Browning, the professor. Many of you know him. I will be there along with him, kind of sitting on the sidelines and listening and learning with all of you. But call us at 703-698-7117, 703-698-7117, and schedule that way, or simply do it the easy way. Go online, go to rozellecare.com. That's rozellecare.com, rozellecare.com, and register online, and we will reserve a seat for you. We need to have that done, and we'd love to have you as our guest and be able to help you and do things. Dr. Harlan, welcome back. You know, we talked about some of the triggering mechanisms, but let's talk about the mechanics. Let's talk about what happens to the body in the case of, you know, low back pain, spinal pain, and so forth. And, you know, you're the expert. You really understand this probably better than most people ever will. So, you know, share your knowledge, my dear friend.
Well, I think it probably we should start with what causes pain in the low back. I think there's a lot of people that assume all low back pain is because we have a pinched nerve, when in fact that's, you know, probably maybe 3 or 4% of the time that's actually occurring. So most low back pain is a combination of restriction in the joint spaces. In other words, the vertebrae meet and they form a joint, and there's a big confluence of ligaments that hold them in place. And sometimes that joint either doesn't move enough, or in some cases it can move too much. Both scenarios often set us up for having an impingement or an irritation of the joint, which causes pain. Now, surrounding all those joints is a bunch of muscles, and their responsibility for the most part, those deep muscles, is to stabilize the back. And for many people, because of their inactivity, those muscles get progressively shorter over time, which is not a good thing, because not only does that compromise the ability for the joint to move, which we already said is most likely not moving well to begin with, but now that muscle doesn't relax in a normal fashion. So now we get muscle strain on top of it. So we go back and forth between the joint not being happy and the muscle not being happy. And usually they go hand in hand.
So how do you determine, you know, whether you have a ligamentous disruption, you got a degenerative disease of the joint front? Is there things that signal that, you know, this is a little bit more involved? And we know that, for example, that if somebody has stenosis, everybody says, oh my God, I have spinal stenosis. What that means is the narrowing of the canal where the nerve comes out. And it can be for a lot of reasons. The disc shrunk up a little bit, or we have scarring in there. We have a ruptured disc. We have the list goes on. There's many different reasons for it, you know, or it's simply a ligamentous imbalance, scarring, hardening. Inflexibility, the facets themselves are not moving the way this, they're hypertrophy, they've gotten larger. From an initial examination, can you tell? Can you get a suspicion? Do you have an idea of which one it be? Because one's more complicated than the other, and I want to get into that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, so I think we're losing our sense of the physical exam in medicine. And what I mean by that is the doctor should be, you know, contacting the area and feeling the quality of the tissue. They should be taking the joint and moving it through ranges of motion. That in itself will give you a tremendous amount of information. If you palpate or, you know, touch the joint that's affected and you move it and it doesn't move and it causes pain, there's a pretty good indication there that that joint is dysfunctional. If the soft tissue that surrounds it has trigger points or knots in it, which you can clearly feel if the doctor takes the time to do it, then you know that the connective tissue in the muscle is involved. And if there's weakness, if you isolate those muscles, and which we do in applied kinesiology, and we test them for strength and we find that they're weak, then we know that they're part of the problem too. So a good physical exam is probably three quarters of the battle. Then our x-rays and our MRIs should come in to help confirm what our, you know, our working diagnosis is.
You know, and that's a problem. doctors don't touch their patients anymore. You know, everything's on Zoom, even from rehabilitation therapy. You don't know how in God's name you can do anything with a patient unless you get your hands on them. You know, the computers are not for everybody, and people don't take visual direction. Sometimes they have to have mechanical do this, do that. But more importantly, with doctors themselves, I can tell you that there's certain diagnostics I can do by looking at somebody's face, by looking at their body posture, looking at the way they walk and so forth. But I mechanically have to put my hands on them. I've got to feel the tissue. I got to see if it's hot or cold. I have to find the strain or inability of that joint space to move by palpating it, have them bend over. And if they have pain, then brace them in certain ways and have them do it again. Is it worse? Is it better? All of those things would indicate, and again, that's the failure, in my opinion, in medicine. And that's what we're very, very careful to avoid in our practice. And I know you do all the time. You're a master at that. You have the capacity and intuitive insight that most people don't. So let's, you know, what would be some signs, some indicators that this patient has got a, you know, it's a dull, deep, aching pain that just is persistent, doesn't go away. But it's not just a normal low back problem from not working out and lifestyle, but there's more to it now because it's been there so long.
Well, you know, and I'll talk about this in my presentation. I have a slide that I use for almost all of my presentations because it just applies to visceral problems just as much as musculoskeletal. You have to ask yourself questions like, is the pain provocative? Can you make it better or worse? Is it a local pain? Is it global pain? Does it have a distribution? In other words, is in the same spot over and over again? Was there an injury involved? These are all things that will kind of guide you on your way to tell you, is the pain in that knee truly a primary knee problem, or is it some sort of referral or some sort of biochemical situation that's making the knee become inflamed? So you have to go through all those scenarios to really come up with an effective diagnosis.
Yeah, it's critical to understand tissue response. You know, the other day I was talking to a friend of ours, a physician that we do some work with, and we were talking about pain patterns and this sort of thing. And, you know, he was saying that the majority of physicians and even specialists in that area, they walk in, you got pain, they might touch it, and the next thing they want to do is they want to put a steroid into it. And so that brings me to the next question. How damaging, when a patient has been put on prednisone to control inflammatory reactions, how damaging when they're doing a joint injection, how damaging when they put them on a course of other medications over a period of time, what's the end result? Is it something that's helping them, or is it something that's actually causing their life to be permanently impaired?
Well, I think in the case of the injectables, it's, in my opinion, it's situational. I kind of understand their thought process, but I don't necessarily agree with the application there. The steroid's pretty powerful. You know, it has a pronounced effect at controlling inflammation. The issue becomes, it has a collateral effect to healthy tissue. So it doesn't specifically know just to go to the diseased, you know, part of the joint or the tendon or what have you. So it'll infiltrate healthy tissue. And that's why, for the most part, you would never do two injections in the same spot over a short period of time. And if you've ever watched the NFL Hall of Fame game, okay, so this will tell you this. And the guys come out to accept their awards. The guys that were playing in the 70s and early 80s, so they're not that old, are almost always with a cane, or they don't walk right. Well, why is that? Is it because they got injured more? I don't think so. It's probably because the trainers back in the day were just shooting them up over and over again with cortisone, and they literally just destroyed their joints.
That's what I was going to ask you. I was going to ask you about the juicing of the joint in athletes like that.
That was kind of the testing ground. You know, athletics was the testing ground that kind of told us, like, hey, if we're going to do this cortisone thing, boy, we shouldn't do it more than once or twice because the outcomes are going to be not very good.
What would indicate somebody who has a mechanically deficient structural system? know that there are structures that in the low back, we'll stay with that for right now. The low back is one, there's five vertebrae in a normal lumbar spine or an adequate lumbar spine. But sometimes we got an extra one, or sometimes we don't have as many. We'll have four or we'll have six. Or there's a break in the gliding points. We call them facets. Is there a mechanical way of telling that exists without an x-ray?
You know, that would be a tough one. You'd have to be a heck of an astute clinician to tell if somebody had what you're calling like a congenital variant. You know, we have a sacralized lumbar vertebrae. That's, in other words, it's an extra lumbar vertebrae that just attaches to our sacrum. Or if we have a spondylolisthesis, that's the what you're referring to, that kind of little crack in the vertebrae. Most 99% of the time that will be found on imaging, and unless it's the person is so unstable, which would be a whole nother ball game there, that it would indicate that they probably had something significant. And you would typically see that more often if the person had a really bad trauma that maybe never got worked up. Let's say a kid was climbing a tree and fell on their back and they didn't tell their mom. And then a year later, they start to get progressively worse back problems. They certainly could have that spondylolisthesis from that injury that kind of healed.
So, you know, when we're talking of spondylolisthesis, you know, which is an actual fracture of the vertebrae and a movement forward, that's so often missed. And then when it's not missed, they tell their patient that, this is permanent, or if it's really bad, they want to do surgery. In my world, I haven't experienced, except for a small percentage of those to be true. When you see something like that and, you know, the x-ray report comes back, spondylosis of, fixable?
Yeah. Depending on the degree of it, yeah, certainly. And the next step would be what I referred to before, is that spondylolisthesis, which means that the vertebrae is physically sliding forward. It's not necessarily 100% something that they're going to do surgery on. It really depends on the extent and if it's causing any kind of nerve compression, either compressing the spinal cord itself or the nerve roots, you know, but that person would have more indicators of what we call neurogenic claudication. That's the person that just feels weak all the time, just dull pain in the legs, usually an older person. And you can almost always tell them that's the person who's, when they're sitting, they're going to get up, they put their hands on their thighs to push themselves up, or almost even walk themselves up across their thighs to get out of the chair. So yeah. Those folks sometimes will need the surgery, but almost always their spinal cord is pretty compressed. So that's not super common.
Yeah. Back in the day, there was if I remember, just popped in my brain, there was an old exam finding called a minor sign, and that's pushing themselves up like that. But, it's true. You know, you watch people move, and if they can't get up, if they don't have the power, that means that transmission from the spine to the muscle isn't working, and fusion and so forth is not something that is going to make a difference, because the surgery that's involved in that is quite extensive. Majority of those can be helped a lot if the patient is willing to make some modifications and some changes along the way. Low back pain affects, I think the number is what at this point, 85% of the population at some point or another, maybe 90%.
Yeah, I would think over the course of their lifetime, absolutely that high.
You know, it's craziness. You know, I've had my problems with it, and, you know, playing Division I ball in college and jumping out of planes and, you know, doing stupid things with martial arts. And I've hurt myself plus 45 years seeing patients. But there's a challenge there, and it's called ignoring something that your body's trying to get your attention. And I know this Wednesday evening, you're going to go over that step by step by step by step. You know, you have an opportunity this Wednesday evening to listen to one of the best, in my opinion, that really understands the neuromuscular mechanics probably better than anybody else that I know. Rozelle Center for Healing, this Wednesday evening, the 21st, 6 p.m., just register, call us, or go online and do it. We'll be right back. Dr. Tom Rozelle, you're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live, as you do every Sunday at high noon on the Eastern Seaboard. We appreciate it, and make sure that you tell all your friends that we're here, and because our mission, our goal, our purpose is to give you as much data and information as we possibly can, so you can make the decisions about your own health. And today's program is just like that. We're talking about low back pain. Why? Because it's Christmas season. You're doing things right now that you normally wouldn't do. You're stressed. You're not eating the way you're supposed to, and you're lifting and moving and doing. It's bringing out some underlying conditions that you wouldn't have thought about. You know, we want to also acknowledge our men and women in service and simply say thank you, particularly during this holiday season. We appreciate you. We appreciate everything that you do for us so we can do what we do. But without you, we wouldn't be who we are. My guest, your presenter this Wednesday evening, none other than the professor, Dr. Harlan Browning. Join us 6 p.m. It's the last program of the year. And we did it specifically because it is the holiday, and we'll have a holiday gift for you if you do come. So call us at 703-698-7117 and simply go online and go to RoselleCare, RoselleCare.com, RoselleCare.com, and register that way. We'd love to see you. I'll be there with Dr. Browning. Enjoy the presentation, but more importantly, you're going to go home with a ton of information. Dr. Harlan, welcome back. Listen, before we get into a little bit more, we have a caller. Lauren, thank you for holding and being patient. How can we help you?
Hi, yes, Dr. Roselle, I really respect your vast knowledge of on medical issues, and I just had a very specific question on glucosamine cream extra strength that's used for back pain or knee pain or joint pain, and it specifically says that it's safe to use for daily use over a long period of time, specifically to keep arthritis away. Now, here's my specific question. Is it strictly plant-based, or would it have any ingredients in it that would be harmful to your body to absorb over a long period of time, like let's say a year and a year and a half, let's say for a knee injury, for example?
Appreciate it, Lauren. Hang on, and we'll explain it to you. Dr. Browning, did you get the question?
Yeah, I did. I personally don't use the topical glucosamines, so I can't speak to how well that they work. I think internally, I've seen a lot of people get tremendous benefits. Again, if you don't have the raw materials to build healthy joints, you won't build them. And then the other thing I would ask about the product, does it have anything else in it that's like a topical analgesic? So in other words, you put it on and it gives a cooling effect, or it for lack of a better term, it deadens the nerve, so to speak. So I would suspect that it does have something like that in there, which maybe gives you the impression that it's working somehow, but I can't be 100% sure on that.
Yeah, when something feels cool, it feels like it's working, and it ameliorates the sensation of the pain pattern. The problem is, and you had asked the question, are these natural substances? More importantly, the question is how they're manufactured. And as Dr. Browning said, if there's other analgesic patterns and there are things that dumb down or quiet the pain, that could be a problem situation.
Let me add to that. Most of the time, the glucosamine and chondroitin and all those are derived from a shellfish source. So I think she also mentioned something about it being vegetarian. So again, I wouldn't know exactly how good of a quality it would be from a vegan source as well.
And as you said earlier, it's very difficult for it to transport into tissue. We sometimes ultrasound can push it, but even that has its modifications. We're coming up to the end of the program. Dr. Browning, I'm looking forward to being with you on Wednesday evening. Please join us, register for the class, and remember, we continue to do this program ongoing every week for one reason and one reason only. We love you all. See you next week. Bye.